Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Linda Howe, who is the founder of the Center for Akashic Studies. And in connection with that, she is giving out a 6-CD teaching resource, and she believes that everyone should work with their Akashic records. So welcome to the program, Linda.
Oh, thank you so much. It's great to be here today.
Yes, indeed. It's good to have you. Now, I think we should start, just for the benefit of some people that may not be clear as to what the Akashic records are, if you would kindly explain what your opinion is of it.
Oh, I'd be happy to. The way I understand it is the Akashic record is a soul-level dimension of consciousness, and it contains a vibrational record or archive, really, of every individual soul and their journey through time. And so every set of records, like your records, my records, every set of records has two parts. And the first part is the imprint of the soul. It's the pattern. It's the highest probability for the soul. It's like the DNA of the soul. So that, and that's fixed, do you know? And then, but what we have corresponding to that is the catalog of lifetimes. Of course, this assumes, assumes that you believe in reincarnation, which I do. But what the idea is that there are, it takes us many lifetimes to become aware of who we are in truth, and it takes many, many visits to the earth plane to really be able to live in the truth of the pattern, that the essential blueprint of our soul. And so we have the pattern, and then we have the catalog of lifetimes held within this dimension, which is a soul-level dimension of consciousness. So that's how I understand the records.
Okay, that's fine. What are they in reality as far as, shall we say, an energy or something of that nature? Do you know what they are? I mean, how are they sort of contained in one place, as it were? Or isn't that the answer?
Do you know what? That's a very interesting question, because the record, do you know, the way we consciously interact with the record is as a result of a perceptual shift. So the record is available in its wholeness, okay? The whole of the record is available everywhere equally. So you don't have to go, do you know, of course it would be very nice to go to the pyramids, yeah? But, you know, you don't have to. I mean, today I'm in Austin, Texas, and the records are as available here as they are anywhere. So it's interesting, it's not geographical, it's perceptual, because it's a domain of consciousness, as much as our own, you know, our memory is a realm of consciousness, our dream states, do you know, these are all different dimensions of consciousness, and the soul level is, I don't want to minimize it by saying it's just another one, but in fact it is. Happens to be a very important one. But, you know, that's really what it is. Does that make sense?
Is it for each individual a total record of the consciousness, or whatever you may call it, of every life they've had?
Well, I'll tell you what. That's a wonderful point. The whole of the record is, the record itself is whole. It's complete. It's intact. It holds the past. It holds the present, and it holds the future. Okay, it's all in there because you know, Mike, when we move from an ordinary state of consciousness to an extraordinary state of consciousness, time as we know it collapses. So, from a records point of view, you know, past, present, future, it's all basically now. Right, which is yeah. really very exciting when you think about it. But while it is true that the whole of an individual's records are contained within this realm, you know, it's not always useful. I mean, it's not always necessary to have everything available in this immediate moment. And so the records, they're very relational. Do you know, so when I work in my own record, while it is true that everything is in there, I don't need everything right now. It's kind of like if you go to a very large department store, and you know, there's furniture and you know, there's there's housewares and there's clothing and there's kids stuff. When I walk into that store, I don't need everything today. And so I can access, I can draw upon what will really be supportive today. And then the next time, you know, and I make use of what I draw forth, and I can go back in and get what I need tomorrow. So, because it really isn't, you know, it's very overwhelming. I mean, all of eternity in a moment can be pretty overwhelming, and it's not always beneficial to have all that at once. So the way the energy moves, the way the guidance, the wisdom, the insight, the way it's delivered is very much on a need-to-know basis.
Right. Now, I understand that we could not, for example, decide to look at just anybody's Akashic records. There is some sort of degree of protection of that information. Is that how you understand it?
Well, I'll tell you what. Yes, I mean, the way I work in the records and the way I teach working in the records is the record, like your record, is filed energetically under your current legal name, which, you know, has a vibration, very distinct vibration. And your record corresponds to that. Now, it is unethical to look into the records of an individual without their consent, without their permission.
Yeah.
You know, because it really is the record of the soul. And it's very intimate work. It's very intimate, it's very simple and very profound, but it's very much an adult activity, you know, and when someone, when people are ready and they have a sincere desire to grow from a more conscious relationship with their own soul, the records are a marvelous resource, but it's not, you know, it's not like a fun house. And so we only open the records of people who make a special request to have their records open. Do you know? And the other thing that's very interesting is that even if you ask about other people, like if I wanted to ask about, I don't know, maybe something about my mother, the guidance that would come to me would be very specific to my relationship with my mother, as opposed to, like, my mother's relationship with her sister. See, that's really none of my business. And so it's interesting. The records operate from the point of the person being read. And so we're looking relationally at how different, you know, circumstances and people, how things are related. And so there's very much a safeguard in that. So we do not energetically violate other people. Do you know? I know there are other ways to scan other people and to get information about them, like things like remote viewing. But the records don't work that way.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that you started working with the Akashic Records since 1996. Now, it possibly seems an unusual subject to focus on. I haven't come across anybody else like yourself. So how did you come to get specifically interested in the Akashic Records?
Well, do you know, I'll tell you what. I didn't realize it was the records that I was seeking. Do you know? Until I encountered them consciously and deliberately. But do you know what's interesting? When I was 24, I had what was for me a very profound spiritual awareness. And in that awareness, I had this amazing sense of being totally known and totally loved and totally, like, at home in the world. It was just amazing. And you know, Mike, I've spent the rest of my life really looking to live from that level of awareness. It was just amazing. And in my journey, you know, on my path, you know, I tried everything. And I was at one point on a panel speaking about shamanism, and there was a woman there who was talking about the Akashic Record. And I was fascinated, do you know? So I went and I took her class. And what happened for me, it was also in, I work in the sacred prayer tradition, and she was working with a prayer as well. And what happened when I opened the records, this was 1994, the experience that I had in the Akashic Record was the closest to that spiritual awakening that I had when I was 24. It just, to this day, it is the closest in terms of that sense of respect and love and that combination of being both known and loved in that dimension, and then come to find out that the record really is energetically, it's an intersecting zone for love and wisdom. It's where, it's like where love and wisdom and actually power, like the pulse of life, where they all interface. And I knew, I have been looking for years, you know, there has to be a way to experience not only, oh, knowledge. You know, knowledge is great, but it doesn't go far enough. There has to be a way to have an experience of power and love and wisdom that is simple, right? That's simple. That is not, you know, that's not impossible for a human being. And that had been my prayer for some time, really. And when I found this in the records, I was, of course, quite taken and really then very inspired, and have been working in the records. So I started working in my own records and just doing readings for myself and other people in 94. And by 96, I was teaching because you know, Mike, what I really have seen in the people that come to me, I felt like most of the people who come to me, there is really no reason for them not to be able to access their own records. Do you see? This is, we are in a very sophisticated age and time, and the people who come to me are really searching for a way to be in conscious communion with their own soul and to be in alignment in a very conscious and deliberate way. And that's why I started teaching. And it's, of course, been really wonderful to be able to work in this way.
Yes, indeed. Now, why is it you feel at this time that people should learn to work with their records? Does it have any connection with the fact that we are in the final stage of this long solar cycle, which many of us believe will end in December 2012, when there will be possibly a very great upliftment? Do you connect some sort of urgency perhaps with people needing to do that because we're so near to that date?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because what we see, you know this 2012, this the time change we're in, right? I mean, what we're seeing, you know, we're really in an age change, an age shift. And one of the most, which has really got the underpinnings of urgency for us, you know, because we know it's like heaven, something is afoot here. You know, let's, you know, time to wake up and get with it. And we are, and we really are collectively. I mean, you know, it's such an exciting time in human evolution, in our spiritual evolution, because because technology has made this particular spiritual revolution available to everybody. You know, I mean, you can get the internet almost anywhere in the world. I mean, we have instantaneous communication, which is very supportive of it's very Aquarian, you know, and it's very supportive of this tremendous revolution. But what's happening is that, and I really believe part of a very important part of the urgency is that, you know, the old ways are collapsing, whether it's religions or political organizations, institutions. See, humanity has been seeking a way to have a conscious relationship, I mean, individually with our own soul and then with the divine, however we understand that. But what's so interesting is we've spent certainly the last 2,500 years trying to have an internal experience through external means, you know, and of course those means have failed. You know, they've been, you know, religions are wonderful, you know, I mean, they do, they provide many things, you know, social order, sense of belonging, I mean, and they are very, you know, they're very supportive in so many, many ways.
Yeah.
But what's missing, and it's a key element as far as I can tell, but really what's missing is that religions are external, and what we are seeking is an internal structure through which we can have a direct encounter with the divine. And the Akashic Record is an internal, it's like a beam of light, it's a bridge of light that enables us to move from within our own soul to a direct experience, our own personal, internal, direct experience of the divine, helping us to bridge the gap. It's almost like there's like a big canyon or a gulf, right, between our soul and out into the world. And the record is a pathway of light that enables us to really make this odyssey in a conscious and responsible way. Do you know, people have had ecstatic experiences of the divine, I mean, all through time, do you know? I mean, this is not that unusual. But the time we're in, and I think really one of the beauties and one of the most exciting features of the New Age is that we are having these experiences deliberately, consciously, responsibly. And we are having them outside of the context of religions.
Yeah.
Do you see? Because the religious structures that have, you know, they've kept the world going for a long time now, but because they are failing us, we are now free to pursue our own experience. You know, it used to be enough to know about God. I mean, for centuries, if we knew about God, that was good enough. But see, we are in an age where knowing about God isn't going to get us, I mean, I don't know, the world is kind of a wild place. And knowing about God doesn't make me feel like going out the door in the morning. But an experience of the reality of God, actually knowing God, you know, more today than yesterday, you know, but just in that knowing, life on the earth plane is very manageable. And really, the goal, I don't know if that's the right word, goal, or maybe the purpose of our soul's journey through time is to be in our spiritual awareness on the earth plane, you know, because it's, well, first of all, we all know it's very dense. You know, the Earth plane is, I mean, it's very dense, it's thick, it's slow. It's actually, it's a great planet as far as I'm concerned. But you know, the great challenge is how can I be aware of my own goodness, my own essential divinity, and that of everyone else when there's really very little evidence. You know, that is, how can we maintain a spiritual awareness in a material realm? And that is, of course, what incarnation is all about. You know, we are here to experience our spiritual selves in bodily human form, and to really take the human journey, make the walk, and wake up to the realities, not only about ourselves, but everybody else as well. And this is what will enable us to navigate these times of tremendous transition. Because when we have an awareness of the divine reality within, then it really, you know, governments come and go, economies, you know, they boom and they bust. And, you know, I mean, all kinds of things happen, you know. And all of that becomes certainly, we can live with it. We know that there is nothing that can happen outside of ourselves, whether it's a hurricane or an earthquake or, you know, some kind of war. There's really nothing that can happen that can separate us from our own divine essence.
Now, you mentioned that we're leaving the age of knowing about God, and I liked your further comments when you said I'm moving into the age of knowing God, and that is the difference, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, yes. Yes, because...
So now, just coming back to your belief that everybody should work with their Akashic records, taking all that into consideration, what is it you're trying to achieve with people? I mean, what would they be expecting to do once they were able to read their records?
Okay. There are a few things. One of the things that happens is the record. Having a conscious relationship with the record enables an individual, first of all, it provides a sense of both emotional and energetic security, stability, unconditional regard, and there's a culture. There's an, you know, Akasha means, it's a Sanskrit word. It means primary substance. And it is governed by three principles, which are fear not, resist not, and judge not. And those governing principles provide for really a remarkable culture or an atmosphere of the Akasha, which is very revealing, but also very respectful. And working in this, when an individual can work in their own records, what happens? It's an opportunity to really find the light within, okay? To really come into contact with your own inner light and to learn how to follow that in life. So that you're not kind of like buffeted around by really some of the turbulence of everyday life. So that you're living life from the inside out. So that really the very best of your innermost self can manifest in the world. So that your everyday life actually represents your deepest truth. And so, and you know what, and you know, Mike, it's a process. This is not magic. But by working with this on an ongoing basis, what happens is that the distance between really your innermost self, your deepest self, and the life that you're living, that distance, it's like it collapses.
Yeah.
And so your connections with people, with other people, are much more authentic and direct. But they're also, I mean, there's nothing harsh about this. You know, it's very kind and respectful. And it's really a lot about the joy of living. But it makes it easier. You know, we all, I mean, and we've all been really striving, you know, to know our own truth and to live that truth. And this is a way of clearing the space, really becoming a more clear channel for your own deepest self to be revealed in life. And then, you know, then life itself becomes a lot more, I mean, well, anyway, it's much richer, it's more rewarding. Our relationships with people are more satisfying. The work that we do, the contributions that we make in the world they're much more satisfying. There's a greater level of satisfaction.
Right. So are you saying that by this method, it really helps one to understand why they are here and the purpose of their life?
Absolutely. Absolutely, because you can work in the records to find out, you know, what are my purposes? What are the intentions and of my soul in this lifetime? And how do I express that? How can I live in alignment with the greatest truths about who I am? How do I do that in the world, really, the way the world is? And so there are, and which brings up another piece to this, because when we work in the records, there is absolutely the dimension of, like, vision. Do you know? Vision and great possibility and probability. But there's also the piece about, I want to say, applying wisdom gained, applying the insight revealed. And that happens very much in the day-to-day of our lives. And this is also, I think, one of the most exciting features of the revolution, the spiritual revolution, is that we are in a time where secular people, we don't have to be mystics or scholars or saints, regular secular people have the opportunity to know personally profound spiritual vision for themselves and for the world, and have the opportunity to be led, to learn how to follow the light in the day-to-day of life, so that the greater vision of hope, you know, really the hopeful vision of a peaceful, generous, loving world is within our reach. We don't have to wait for, you know, we don't have to wait for some international summit meeting to happen. I mean, this is a way, this is a way that we can actually move in the direction of creating, I really want to say, heaven on earth.
That would be nice.
Yes. Well, I think just heading in that direction is good, right?
Oh, yes, yes, indeed.
Yes, yes,
so,
yes.
When one then learns of their purpose in life and realize that they have been traveling a long journey through many lives, mm-hmm. What is their ultimate goal? I mean, where is it all leading them to?
Okay. From what I've seen in the records, what it looks like is this, that the it's like the objective, right? It's actually the odyssey, do you know? The odyssey is to return home, so to speak. But the idea is this, that each individual's soul is challenged to come to know their own goodness, the goodness, the essential goodness of their innermost self, no matter what they've done, no matter what they have failed to do. That the challenge is, can I love myself no matter what? If I'm rich, if I'm poor, if I have good behavior, if I have bad behavior, if I'm a downright crook and criminal, the challenge is, can I know that there is no activity, there is no behavior in which I can participate that can separate me from my own soul, that can take me away from the love of the divine, that it is an energetic impossibility to be separate from the divine presence. And as I come to know that about myself, and you know, Mike, we're infinite beings, and that's a good thing because this takes a while. But truly, it does. It's like, oh, this is, you know, we come in, we have to grow into the fact that we really are lovable, and we are loving beings, and we're acclimating to increasing states of love in all its expressions. And then, so that's the individual. Then what happens is every individual must and will. I mean, there's no question. This is all going to, as far as I can tell, this is where we're going. Each individual come to know that what is true for them is true for all others, so that my awareness of my own goodness, it's not just about me. The fact of the matter is, it's about you, and it's about everyone listening. That each and every one of us has this essential goodness within. And we are challenged to know this not only about ourselves, but about everybody else as well. The people we like, the people we don't like, the people we think are ruining everything, even them. That they are good. That there is this quality, that there is a spark within each and every person. And so the game is that through time we come to know the truth about ourselves, all others, and really life. Life itself. The goodness of life.
So,
and we live
in this. Yeah, I believe what you're really saying then is that we recognize our oneness with all life.
Yes. Yes.
And the fact is, of course, on Earth, in this cycle of duality, we tend to feel separated for many, many reasons from other people.
Yeah. Well, see, and that's the challenge. The challenge is that the human experience, you know, if we're looking at evidence, I mean, what we see from a human perspective is that we're all like little islands and that we're all separate. And some people are good and some people are bad. But see, when we look from the perspective of the soul, it's an altitude of consciousness. When we look from that place, we see, oh, no, 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 no. No, no, no. There is a greater truth here. And that is the challenge, is how to live in the earth, on the earth plane, knowing the truth, knowing the greater truth. Yes.
So, bearing in mind that we've been told all these stories about God, as you've mentioned yourself, in as much that God is good and people are bad and God punishes the bad guys and so forth, how do people sort of throw off that yoke which is hanging round their neck? Because that is the way, generally speaking, people are brought up to believe, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, this is an idea that has just, you know, this has driven civilizations, right, in their rise and fall.
Yes, indeed.
It really is. This is, you know, God loves us. He likes our people. He doesn't like your people. And, I mean, all of this.
Yes. So is it the coming new age that is really motivating us to sort of examine these ancient beliefs?
Oh, yes. Yes, and see, what's happening, you know, everything, you know, it's like a great conspiracy that is working for our evolution, yes. But a few things are happening. One is that we recognize people are really recognizing that the old ideas, however much we may love them and hang on to them, that they're not working. They're not making us happy. They're really not. They're not bringing out the best in us. They're making us feel bad about ourselves and the people we love and the people who we might like if we weren't so scared of them. So one of the things that's happening is we are seeing that these old ideas, they no longer fit. The other thing I find fascinating is that as we are moving into this age of global unity, I mean, it really is a global village. And I think, you know, the most obvious level is certainly the level of communication, international communication. In instance, we know what's happening around the world. We have that. But, you know, our resources, do we have an ecological crisis on the planet? Our need for one another, the need for one another, the need to share, the need to find a way to work together is very, it's dominant. Our awareness that we have people who are hungry, and we have people who are sick, and we have people, you know, if one of us is sick, we all suffer. That we are in a time when we are coming to know just how much we need one another.
Yeah.
And we are learning this through, you know, for centuries we thought it was really a great idea to, like, I don't know, strip the rainforest. I don't know, it looked like a good idea. Nobody, you know, there was no ill will there. There was no malice. It just looked like a great idea. And
yeah.
And we've actually driven ourselves to this point because we really do want to be in the conscious awareness of our oneness. We do want to find a way to live as one human family in our, you know, in our global village. And so it's through the crisis, the physical crisis of the day is really just carrying us along, because we have to find ways to work together in order to really ensure the survival of our children. And everybody at some level, you know, everybody gets this, which is very exciting, very, very exciting.
It's very interesting that over the, say, the last 100 years, when you look back, you can see how things have progressively got worse. And since the turn of the century, we've seen the world really going to the dogs, as you might say. So it really is showing us, is it not, how things have gone wrong. And it's asking us, really, to find a new way, isn't it?
That's exactly what's happening. And it seems, do you know, it's interesting because the way you said it, it's, you know, when we turn the corner on the century, it's like things just have gone terrible. I mean, it's just been like, oh, my God. Things we thought would never happen are happening. Do you know? And we know about them. And so there is an urgency. I mean, our very survival is prompting us to look within, because all of our best ideas are failing us. Do you know? They aren't working. And so that's the opportunity of the age.
Yeah. And I think we have to be fair and say that for some long time now, of course, we have been under the influence of what I call the dark forces, because they have really taken control of the world.
Right, but see, you know what's interesting about that is that as long as we individually have the idea that we are separate, if I have the idea that I am separate from the God force, then I have no authority. If I have the idea that it's all outside of me, if the power is outside of me, then then anybody can have their way, do you see? Mm. But it's as we come to wake up individually to the truth that the light, that the force of God, the very pulse of the God force is alive within us, within me, within you, within everyone listening. And as we come to know that as real in our own everyday lives, then that is what activates the light. And I know, you know, sometimes I think it's corny or a little schmaltzy. Oh, the light in me sees the light in you. But that's really what we're looking at. We're looking at a revolution of light where each individual is waking up to the reality of who they are. And in the presence, in the awareness of that presence, then anything that is less than, okay, you know, dark forces, you know, cosmic troublemakers, all of that, it all falls away. But this is part of the shift. The first step in the shift, in the, you know, the collective transformation, is the awareness at a level of the individual that all of the light of life is mine, is within me. It always has been. It always will be. And, okay, so we had some amnesia here. We forgot. Now it's like, and now we're all waking up to this. And this is where the shifting comes in. The shift is just a natural result. I mean, it's a natural consequence of true awareness.
I would interpret that on another level as saying that we are now creating the energy to enable this shift to take place, and of course, we're lifting up with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's known by different names, but I think most people call the end of this cycle the ascension,
mm-hmm.
and it's obviously something well worth working for. The work you're doing, of course, is helping people to understand perhaps their place in it. But something I wanted to ask you in connection with that is, what type of approach do you take with people to teach them how to contact the Akashic Records? Is it done through a series of, say, exercises, or is it something you do and cater for from a personal point of view?
Okay, this is the way that I work. As I work with a sacred prayer, it's a prayer called the Pathway Prayer Process to access the heart of the Akashic Records. So it's a prayer. And in the saying of the prayer, there's a rhythm to it. I mean, it's an invocation, basically, right? So,
yes.
Okay. And in the saying of the prayer, two things happen. One is that if I say the prayer, my consciousness gets moved into a state of receptivity.
Yeah.
Okay? I am open to impression. At the same time, I call up a particular set of records, maybe my own, right? And
right.
So these two things are happening. I maintain full conscious awareness, okay? So I'm fully conscious, but it's a subtle shift where I am able to receive insight, guidance, wisdom, energy, okay? I'm able to receive that from the one set, you know, by interacting with the one set of records. So there's an opening prayer, and then there's a closing prayer, and they work together. And the way I work with people is to teach them, it's in my book. I have the book, How to Read the Akashic Records. and the CD set. In the CD set, there's all the exercises that, that actually I work with you to take you through them. But in the saying of the prayer, there is establishing a deliberate relationship with this particular domain of consciousness. And some people, like, immediately, they just, it's almost like they fall right into it. For other people, they have to work with it a little. It's okay. You know, we're all in different places. You do not have to be psychic. This is not psychic. Do you know, this is about soul-level awareness, which is, and certainly, you know, psychic work is certainly wonderful work in many, many ways, but this is a little different than that. So people don't have to be clairvoyant or anything. And because, you know, everybody has a soul. Everybody actually is a soul. And so everyone is entitled to a more conscious relationship with their own soul. And that's the work that I'm committed to, making that available to people.
Right. But when people progress a bit on this course, is there any danger that they may so want to be successful that they might sort of kid themselves that they're getting in touch with the archaic records, or is there some definite way that you would know you have?
Okay. There is, it's qualitative. It's qualitative. So what happens is that when we work in the records, the rule of thumb is this: it's energy first, information second. Okay?
Yes.
That's the first thing. The other thing is it really is different. I know if people may, you may try to kid yourself for a while, and that's okay. I mean, if that happens, if people kid themselves a little bit. But the way we know we're working in the records is we know by the results we're producing.
Yeah.
See, if I'm working in my records and I'm getting guidance, and I apply that guidance to the best of my ability, okay, what will happen is I will start enjoying positive changes in my everyday life. I will be experiencing more compassion, love, acceptance, less fear, less judgment, less resistance. And so, initially, it may be—I don't even know what to say. I mean, the real acid test is, of course, to work with it and watch what happens. But you know, it's interesting too. Like, I know for a lot of people, and I have this myself. Like, if I work in my records and I'm in the energy of it, I'm like, and I get some guidance or some suggestions, it seems very matter-of-fact or very natural to the realm. And I don't think it's a big deal. But what I've found is that if I write it down, you know, whatever the guidance is, you know, write it down, and then maybe a week later I look and see, when I have a little distance from it, I am able to appreciate the perspective of the records much more than when I'm right up close to it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
So as you progress, I believe you've got a level that you refer to as being advanced. Would people necessarily be expected to reach an advanced level, or can you be fairly successful without getting that far?
You can be very successful because the records will meet you wherever you're at. Do you see? But I know in working with students that, like, in this level of advanced student, we do work with clearing unwanted ancestral patterns. We work with reconciling past lives, to our present incarnation. we work with issues of, you know, some of the more fine points of energy healing in the Akashic Record. And it's interesting because different individuals are drawn to experiment with different aspects of healing work in the records. So it's there for anybody who wants it, but certainly, see, the records themselves, because of the relationship to time, what happens is it's very common, actually, to encounter other expressions of who you've been in other times. And it's very common to see the impact of the consciousness of your relations, those who have gone before you, and really to see who you are in relationship to these people and how you all got together and really what you're all about from the perspective
right.
of the soul. It's very fascinating, but certainly, you know, whatever people want to do with it, you know, I know that people are led. I mean, their own questions about who they are and life will lead them on a wonderful exploration through their own records.
Right. I'll have to stop you there because we're getting near the end of the program, and I will have to announce next week's guest. But do you have a website address that people can refer to for extra information?
Yes. My website is www.akashicstudies.com, AKASHIC, studies.com, or you can go to lindahowe.com, either one.
What was that last one, Linda Howe?
Linda Howe, yes, LINDAHOWE.com.
Yeah. Oh, I see, right, so you've got two separate websites.
Yeah.
If people want to order your book, can they get the information off either website?
Either website, yes. The book, right, the information is about the book, and I have another audio coming out in September and a book soon to follow on healing through the Akashic Records.
Oh, right.
So there's some things to look forward to.
Indeed, yes. Yeah. Well, it's been extremely interesting. It's quite a subject, I must admit. I could have moved on to a few more questions, but I think we've covered it extremely well. So I must thank you very much for coming onto the program and being prepared to have a good chat about that. Have you got any sort of final quick message for our listeners?
Do you know, here's the thing. This is the time that your soul is calling for you to know yourself more than ever before. And so
that's
any inclination you have, it's real. It's very real.
That's a nice way, I think, to end the program. So thank you again, Linda. It's been very nice to speak to you and extremely interesting. Thank you very much.
Oh, wonderful. Thanks so much, Mike. Bye-bye now.
You're welcome. Well, my friends, I'm sure you found that equally interesting. My guest next week will be Veronica Keane. She is the widow of Montague Keane, who did a lot of mediumship and channeling work when he was alive. And she is carrying on with his mission. And he has, in fact, since he passed on, actually materialized and even spoken in his own voice. And through Veronica, he writes a weekly message which goes onto the web. So I think that's another one you're going to find extremely interesting. So thank you for being with me today, and I hope you can make it next week. God bless you all.